This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. As-salatu was-salam ala ashraf al-anbiya'i wa mursaleen. Nabiyyina wa qudwatina Muhammad. Alayhi afdal as-salah wa azka al-taslim. اللهم علمنا بما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما يا رب العالمين. Today is the third session. Can you hear me? Let's see. Let me try to. Okay. Can everybody hear me? Okay. Okay, today is the third session. At the end of the previous session, Dr. Mohsen asked a very important question, which I debated whether to get into or not, but I think it's worth at this point getting into it. It's going to be really important moving forward, and it will kind of follow off of some of the kind of introductory remarks we made in the first class about the different types of languages and how there were analytical languages and synthetic languages and how different languages kind of communicate meaning. So I will just share screen for a second on the whiteboard. The question that Dr. Mohsen had asked was, we had as one of our introductory sample sentences, we had hadha masjidun. That was one of our beginning, and I'm going to write it in my very, very rough penmanship here. Hadha masjid, and we're saying at the end of here is masjidun. For those of you who know the Quranic script, that's a dhammatan. If you want it written out, we can also write it out as two dhammas, no problem. And Dr. Mohsen asked, what's with the dhammatan or the dhamma on the end of this word? Why is it dhamma and not, say, for example, kasra, or say, for example, fatha? This is one of the most important questions you can ask in Arabic. It has to do with what we just touched on in the very first class about how Arabic and other synthetic languages communicate meaning. And we said, for example, we had our sample sentence, Tom hits the ball. And we talked about how in English, you understand who's hitting the ball and what is getting hit because of the order of the words in the sentence, by the sequence of how those words appear. And how we prepped, I prepped you by saying that Arabic is different, is that you're going to understand who's doing the hitting and who's getting hit or what is getting hit, not because of the order of the words in the sentence, but because of things that actually appear on the word themselves. Okay? So signifiers, right? The words are actually going to change. What's going to change in an Arabic word? By the way, this whole idea is the idea of grammatical case. Okay? If you've ever heard that term before, case. Languages have different cases, right? One case or one grammatical case shows or has to do with somebody doing an action. A separate grammatical case is for somebody receiving an action. Another grammatical case might have to do with location. If something is under something, over something, to the left, to the side, in front, etc. Okay? Case is a fundamental concept in languages. Does English use cases? Does English use grammatical cases? Can you guys think of any English words that demonstrate grammatical case that are different depending on if the word is the subject or the object? There's only one kind of scenario in the English, in the modern English language today, where we see this. Old English used to use cases a lot more frequently, but in modern English, we really only have it left over in pronouns. We say, for example, he hit the ball, right? He is a subject. What if that person that he is getting hit, what would we say? The ball hit
him.
Oh, look at how it changed. Whereas our first example in our first class was Tom hit the ball hit Tom. Both words stay the same, right? So that's an example of how in English doesn't demonstrate case, or how case endings don't change. But we have this relic, this ancient relic from Old English that shows us a time when English used to actually have these sorts of same things. They're left over in the pronouns. He hit the ball hit him, right? Him, the word has changed to demonstrate to you that it's the object. It's getting hit. You can't possibly use him in that sentence except as an object, just like you can't possibly use he except that it's the subject. So Arabic has that like times 10, basically. So that idea that the word itself is going to change, okay, is what we're doing in Arabic. Now, begs the question, okay, what changes? Where can I look for these changes? And what patterns, upon what patterns do these changes happen? Are they predictable? Are they random? What? Alhamdulillah, they're very predictable. They're very predictable and very organized, and they always happen in the same place. They don't happen in the beginning of a word. They don't happen in the middle of a word. They happen at the end of a word. They happen at the end. Do they happen to the letter itself? Well, the short answer for now is no. That's one of those little white lies that I'm gonna tell you right now, just because it's easier. Right now, what we're looking at is the changes that happen to the harakah, the small vowel at the end. Okay? So we have here on the end of masjidun, I never put my dot on my jim. Hada masjidun. Why is it dhamma? This dhamma shows that it's in a particular case, okay? Just like fatha is for a different case, different grammatical case, and a kasra is for a third grammatical case. Some languages like Sanskrit have over 10 cases. Latin, I believe, has 8. Arabic, alhamdulillah, only has 4. So it's easier than those languages, and they don't... All 4 of them don't apply to all types of words. Okay, so this is, as you can tell, guys, this is going to be very theoretical just for like 5-10 minutes. If you don't get it, don't worry about it. If you get it, this is going to help you a lot. Okay, there's 4 possible cases in Arabic. We can say that they correspond to now, dhamma, fatha, kasra, and what's our last one is sukun. Okay, dhamma, we use it for what's called the nominative case. Oof, what is that? That basically means the subject or the doer of a verb. More than you guys ever wanted to know about linguistic theory. Nominative case. Fatha is generally going to be called the accusative case, or it's going to be used for objects, right? Things that are on the receiving end of a verb. Kasra is going to be used for what's called the genitive case that has to do with like locations. If I say after, before, under, right? And then this is something that's very obscure. That's called the jussive mood. I'm not even going to bother explaining what that is. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. But there's only 4. And they, in general, they correspond to dhamma, fatha, kasra, sukun. Okay? Now, we said that there were 2 types of sentences. We said that there was a sentence that began with an ism and a sentence that began with a fi'l. And we said that we're going to focus on sentences that begin with an ism. So, those types of sentences... Does anybody remember what they were called from the last 2 classes? What's the name of a sentence that begins with an ism?
Jumlatul ism.
Very good. Jumla ismiya. Good. Jumlatul ismiya. Excellent. Very good. So those types of sentences have two essential parts. Can anybody else recall what those two parts were? And whether in Arabic or in English, it's not essential. I have a lot of humming going on over here. Nope. Okay. In Arabic, they were called, do we have in the chat? Subject and predicate. Excellent. Sheikh Family, yes, correct. In English, we translate it to subject and predicate. In Arabic, if I can do this here, listen to me. It's not registering my Arabic typing. Yes, Mubtada khabar. Very good. Excellent. Mubtada and khabar. Mubtada and khabar is the same essentially as subject and predicate. So all you need to know to now finally getting around to answering Dr. Mohsin's question. The rule for the subject and the predicate, the mubtada and the khabar, is that it has to be in the nominative case. Okay? The subject and the predicate has to be in the nominative case, meaning it has to express dhamma at the end of both of the words, whether it is mubtada, the first word, the subject, or the khabar, the predicate. Okay. In this sentence, hadha is the mubtada and masjid is the predicate. Now you're going to ask me, wait a second, Imam. I see this first word. In this sentence, your example, mubtada. The mubtada is hadha. And hadha does not have a dhamma. So what on earth is going on? You told me that in a jumla ismiya, in a sentence that begins with an ism, both parts, the subject and the predicate, are in the nominative case. And we can tell that, or the sign that it's in the nominative case is because it ends with a dhamma. What's so special that's going on with hadha? And my answer to you will be that in Arabic, there are two types of words. There are words where you can see the sign of the grammatical case on the end, and there are words where you cannot. And hadha just happens to be the latter. Hadha is one of the types of words called mebni, where you do not see the sign of the grammatical case on it. It doesn't mean it's not in that case. No, it still is. Because it's mubtada, meaning the subject, it is in the nominative case. But because it is this particular type of word, which we'll explain later, it does not show that sign. It does not have a dhamma on the end of it. Whereas other types of words would. For example, if I switched the sentence up to Ahmed Kabir. Ahmed is big, or Ahmed is large. Both of those words would demonstrate the case that they're in. It would be Ahmedu, because it's a jumla ismiya, Kabirun. And so there it would be apparent from both words. This is mubtada, this is khabar. They're both dhamma, because it's in this case, the nominative case. So forgive me if that's painful for anybody to go through, but Dr. Mohsin asked the question and it needed to be answered. So we will keep coming back to these concepts. Do not feel bad if it doesn't make any sense to you, if you think it's all Greek to you now. It's not Greek, it's just Arabic. Okay, so given that, let's go back to our book, because our book isn't going to jump ahead to giving you theoretical grammar hardcore right off the bat like I just did. It's going to give you a nice, easy, slow transition to things that are going to be able to... They're like tools in your tool belt. So last class we had two ways to ask questions, okay? The first way was to ask a yes or no question. What was that way? No, just tell me in Arabic, how do you ask, with what do you ask yes or no question?
You have to add the, like,
Excellent. The answer, one of our brothers in attendance here in person said the Hamza, right? We had several questions that simply changed our statements, hadha masjidun, into a question, a yes or no question, with the Hamza before it. Ahadha masjidun? And it became a yes or no question. Is this a masjid? Good. The second thing we learned last class was to ask an open-ended question about the identity of the object. And some of us still haven't learned to raise our hands after all these years. But one of the brothers called it up, which was ma. Yes, excellent. So we have ma as a second tool in our tool belt to ask questions, this time to ask not yes or no questions, but to ask questions of identity. What is this thing, right? For objects. Ma hava. And just that is enough for me to leave you alone during Hajj or Umrah in Mecca and Medina, and you can walk around and ask the people who live there, ma hava, ma hava, ma hava, and people can teach you, and then you will build your vocabulary. And you can even take guesses. You can say, ahada kitabun? Is this a book? Ahada masjidun? And they can say, yep, this is a masjid. You are in a masjid. So that was last class. This class, we're going to add yet another tool in your tool belt to ask questions, because gaining information is a lifelong goal for the Muslim. Ibn Abbas radiallahu anhu, he said, how did he gain so much knowledge? Lisanun sa'ud. He said, because I had a tongue that loved to ask questions. So today we're going to learn about how to ask the identity of types of people. Okay, before we were talking about objects, and so the appropriate question word was ma. Now we're going to learn a different question word, men, which means who. So who would like to read for me the first example? There's a question and then a response. Let's have, can someone from the Sheikh family do it?
What are we doing?
Men hada.
Good. And the response?
Hada tabibun.
Excellent. So we have men hada, which means who is this, as opposed to what is this. If you walked up to a person and you grabbed them by the arm and you said ma hada, it would be slightly insulting. You would be implying that he is an object, right? You have to use men hada. This we'll talk about, you know, the categories of grammar that this corresponds to later, because I've overloaded you on grammar theory today. The response is hadha tabibun. This is a doctor. That's supposed to be a stethoscope around his neck. You can't really see it, but he has glasses, so you can tell he's a very intelligent man. Hadha tabibun. This is a doctor. For those of you who recall the fact that it is tanween and not simply dhamma, but two dhammas, indicates that it is indefinite, meaning a doctor among many doctors. But we'll talk more about that later once we get into Alif Lam Ta'rif. Good. Someone who's here with me, Ismail, can you, do you have the PDF with you on your phone? Oh, okay. Who can read the second example, both the question and the response? Go ahead, Ibrahim. Question first, right to left. Men. Good. Ibrahim made us aware of a very important thing to look out for. There, notice the difference between men and min. Okay? You switch up that one haraka and you've made a completely different word. Min means from, which we will learn very soon, inshallah. Men, with a fatha on top of the meme, means who. So men hadha. Good. The response is hadha waladun. Waladun means boy. Means boy. So we're learning lots of vocab today too, inshallah. Yes. Yes.
Is this?
If you're asking a yes or no question, you would use hamza. Ahada waladun?
Okay, so that is this.
Correct.
What's that?
Ma means what?
What
is?
What is?
Okay. Yes, exactly. Good. Good question. So now we have three tools in our tool belt for asking questions. We have the hamza for yes or no questions. We have ma for objects, the identity of objects. And we have men for who? The identity of human, I won't say objects, but you get the idea. The third example, let's have Sister Syra, are you able to read the third example?
Man hada talibun.
Very good. Man hada means who is this? Hada talibun. Talibun is a student. A student. Again, notice the pattern. It has a tanween on the end. It's dhamma because it's khabar. It is the predicate of the sentence. Both the mubtada and the khabar have to have dhamma or be in the nominative case. It has two dhammas and not just one because it is indefinite, meaning it's one of many students and not one particular student you're trying to talk about. Let's go to Sister Naima, if you're able to. Can you do the next example?
I had a waladun.
Very good. What's the response?
La had a rajulun.
Very good. Excellent. So the author switched it up on us. It's not just a men hadha. Now we have a yes or no question. The person thinks that they know what that is. They studied a couple pages of Arabic and they're going to take a shot at it. Ahada waladun? What are they asking? They're asking, is this a boy? And you tell me, I mean, I've never seen a boy with a full beard. I'm guessing no. And so the response is, la hada rajulun. So waladun being boy, rajulun being man. Interestingly enough, the root word for rajul, which is man, is the same as rijul, which is leg, because of the man is supposed to walk out into the world and get the provision. So that's what he's always doing. So we have a lot. Arabic is a very rich language when we go back to the roots. And we have lots of books for that in the office someday, inshallah. Excellent. Who else can we hear from? Maybe Rashad. Rashad, if you're available, can you tackle the next on the next page?
Sure. Okay. Mahada.
Good. And the response?
Hada masjidun.
MashaAllah. Excellent. That was a freebie. They gave you a nice little review last class, which was mahada. So what is this hada masjidun? Which is, it looks like, inshallah, what our masjid will look like. This is a with the Russian-esque domes. Good. Let's see. Who haven't we heard from when it comes to the examples? Dang it. Step right up with the next example.
Man hadha.
Good. And the response?
Hadha tajirun.
Very good. Hadha tajirun. Tajirun. Okay. Man hadha. Who is this? Hadha tajirun. I'm going to plant a seed in your head right now and point out that talibun and tajirun, they sound very similar. There's a reason for that too, but we'll discuss it later, inshallah. Tajirun is a merchant, right? Somebody who trades, they're involved in commerce, businessman, right? Here we can see, it looks like he has a clothing shop or something like that. And that is who he is. So, hada tajirun. Okay. Let's go to Brother Tamim, are you able to participate? Can you do the next example?
Yeah, sure, inshallah. Give me a second here.
هذا كلب.
Excellent. هذا كلب. This is a dog. And in Saudi Arabia, if there was ever an example with a dog or a donkey, they would say right after it, عزكم الله, which is like whenever something unpleasant is mentioned, they would say like, may Allah, like, you know, it's like, pardon my French almost. Like we would say like, pardon my French, عزكم الله. So هذا كلب. Very good. Who else would like to do? Yeah, there's going to be a lot of vocab this week. There's طالب العلم. Is that you, mashallah? Ya salam. Ya salam. Okay, ya talib al-ilm. Next example.
Ahadha kalbun? La, hadha qittun.
Excellent, very good. So, ahadha kalbun? What type of question are we dealing with? This is a yes or no question because we have the hamza. Ahadha kalbun? Without the hamza, it would be a statement. This is a dog. But because we added the hamza, it becomes a yes or no question. أهذا كلب؟ لا. هذا قط. And a قط is one of the many words for a cat. It actually sounds like a cat. Yes, Ibrahim has a question.
So, هذا is yes or no.
هذا means this.
No, I mean...
The hamza, ahada. Yes, exactly.
And then the ma is what?
Ma means what, or what is.
So it's not even.
No, it's an open-ended question. Exactly, yep. So our three tools that we've gotten so far to ask for more information, because we want to know, is the hamza, the ma, and the men. And those are the tools that we're going to be using a lot. Good. Let's hear again from Dengit. Next question. Next example.
هذا حمار.
Good. هذا حمار. And they would say, عزكم الله, because it's a donkey. Man, pardon my French. حمار is a donkey. I'll point out for the benefit of everybody the difference between هذا, which if you go to Egypt, you might pick up that slang, and هذا. هذا and هذا. One of the most common mistakes we have in the Quran. The recitation of the Quran. The difference is, does your tongue come out between your teeth or does it stay behind your teeth? If you keep your tongue behind your teeth, then you're in za mode. هذا, هذا, which is incorrect, right? You'd have to do الزمر or زلزالها, right? But if you want to pronounce the tha, you have to actually stick your tongue between your two teeth, tha, like that. ذلك الكتاب لا ريب فيه. Okay, good. So let's have Dr. Mohsen with the next example.
أهذا حمار؟ لا هذا حصان.
Very good. أهذا حمار. The question is a yes or no question. Is this a donkey? No. هذا حصان. حصان, which is a horse. Also important, just like the ذا-ذا difference, is to put what's called تفخيم at the proper places. So we have تفخيم of the صان instead of حصان, like Allah says in Surah Ar-Rahman, خيراتٌ حصان. Right, is actually talking about the Hur al-Ain in paradise, insha'Allah. Hisan with a sod is a horse. So we don't want to be misunderstood. You could get in trouble. yes, salam. Okay, good. Sheikh family, can you do the following example?
Wama haza jamalun.
Excellent. وَمَا هَذَا. Now, ooh, look, we got thrown in wa, which means and. So we have here now many things back to back. So, okay, we'll admit we've been asking a lot of questions. So we'll start to say, and what is this? وَمَا هَذَا. And what is this? It's ma, because it's not a person. All due respect to the camel. It's not a person. So we use ma instead of men. And then the response is hadha jamalun, camel, which is actually in the Egyptian dialect, gamal, which is where English took the word camel. Right? You see how that goes. Dengen has a question. Yes, sir.
Why do we have the wa before the ma?
Good. Why do we have the well before the ma? My belief, and Allah knows best, is that he just wanted to teach you what well meant right here, which simply means and. Though we should say that single letters like well have many more meanings in Arabic than similar translated words have in English. So the well, I think, has 8 different meanings, just like from, min, has, I think, 11 different meanings. But again, that's down the road. Right now, well means and. And the same thing I would point out, just as a tajweed point, because I love teaching tajweed, the, ha, the, instead of za, keep your tongue coming out in between your 2 rows of teeth to pronounce the thal instead of the za. Good. Moving right along. Ibrahim, go for the next example.
Ma hadha, hadha dikun.
Good. Ma hadha, what is this? Not men, because it's not a person. Hadha dikun. This is a rooster. Dik is specific to the male, the rooster. Yeah. There's a funny story about that, but I don't think we have enough time to I don't think we have enough time for that. Okay. Dang it. Next example.
Man hadha. Hadha madarasun.
Oh, I gave Dang it a very hard one, and it's not fair of me to do so, but I did it anyway. Okay, he realizes something tricky is going on, but he's not quite sure what it is. So, men hadha is easy. Who is this? Hadha, letter by letter, mudarrisun. Mudarris. Mudarrisun. There's a shadda on the ra and a kasra underneath that shadda, which means that it is the sound of a kasra. This becomes extremely important later on. Actually, mudarris is a teacher, okay, so you know. And the only difference between the one who has taught and the one who is teaching is that little kasra under that shadda, mudarris, mudarras. But that's for later. Hadha mudarris right now is, this is a teacher. Mudarrisun, mudarrisun at the end because it is the predicate. It is the khabar of the sentence. And we said that both the subject and the predicate in Arabic, they are in the nominative case. And the simple rule I gave you, which is one of those half truths, is that we can tell that because of a dhamma. Looks like we have, mashallah, we've made it to our last example. Let's see, going back to Naima, Sister Naima, could you finish us off here?
I had the komi soon. Yeah. Le hadha min di mundirun.
Very good. So we have a yes or no question. It's ahadha qamisun. Qamis, as we learned in the previous lesson, is a shirt. Tradition, like in classical Arabic, it was also used for a thob. They don't call it that anymore. They call it a thob. So the question is this a qamis? And the answer is no. This is a mindil. A mindil is kind of like, it can either be it's hard to see, it can either be a napkin or a tissue, or in this case, a headpiece, a shimag. You know, it's actually the, you know, what they, in Saudi Arabia and the Gulf countries, they wear the shimag over them themselves. You can call it a mindil, though every area has different words for it. In Saudi Arabia, they call it a shimag. In the UAE, they call it the gutra. They have different imama. But the actual fabric, an actual like long piece of fabric, whether it's like a handkerchief or something to put on your head, the actual fabric is called mindil.
What we call scarf.
Yeah, we could call it scarf, potentially. I don't know if they have a word for scarf over there. I don't really use scarf. Yes, question. Talib. Okay, the question was, what's the difference between talib and mudarrisun? A talib is a student, whereas a mudarrisun is a teacher. Okay? Talib literally means a seeker. Talaba is to ask for something. So talib is the one who asks or the one who seeks for something. It's not literally a student, but they use talib now for student more than they use other words for student. Any other questions before we depart for today? That was a lot of vocab.
Yes,
Dr. Sayyid.
So you said mudarrisun is the teacher and mudarrasun.
Oh, I knew I would get you with that. See, Dr. Mohsen is just like me. He doesn't like to go beyond what he doesn't understand. And that's why I always need to know why. Right. So yes, we will get into this. It'll take time to explain, but yes, if we're going for the literal opposite of what is mudarris, it would be mudarras, because mudarras is the object or the one who is receiving that action, the one who is taught, whereas al-mudarris is the one who is teaching. This is because of, it all goes back to that double letter with the shadda. It removes it from what we call the first bab of morphology, and it brings it to the second bab of morphology. Something I can't get into this class, but it is a rewarding thing to know. So I'm glad you asked that question. The literal opposite, the literal word for student from that word is, yes, is mudarras, mudarras. Any other questions? Yes, Ismail. Yes, exactly. Oh, you guys are awesome. And he connected it to madrasa, madrasa, which is the place of study. Yeah. So we're going to learn a little bit of morphology, because in Arabic, if you learn the three-letter root, you can derive multiple words from it. You can, if you know the patterns, you can actually derive 10, sometimes 15 words at a time, right? So that will be a little bit down the road, not too far, inshallah. Dars, very good. Dars as well, as a unit of something to study, right? The dars. Excellent. Oh, yeah. Very good, everybody. Thank you very much for your attention and participation. We will see you Saturday, inshallah ta'ala. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.